Everyone has a story. How they got here, where they met along the way, the choices they made, the dreams they are chasing. Welcome to Anthologies of Hope. Welcome back to Anthologies of Hope for episode number 7. We've got an awesome episode this week, as well as some special announcements. I'm your host, Rick Osowski, and as always, I'm not a mental health professional in any way, simply a mental health advocate with a passion for storytelling. I won't bury the lead any longer, but want to let everyone know about a special bonus episode we'll have coming out in January. As our listeners know, we refer to Hope for the Day as an organization taking action in proactive suicide prevention and all things mental health. It's rather serendipitous that they are also based in Chicago, and so is their social enterprise, the Amazing Sip of Hope Coffee Shop. For Chicago listeners, be sure to check them out in Logan Square on Fullerton. Hope for the Day has started hosting monthly conversation cafes, which are evening events that bring in mental health professionals and advocates from the larger Chicagoland community to talk in a more intimate setting. I was lucky enough to attend the conversation cafe hosted on December 19th with a timely topical focus of All in the Family, especially as the holidays are quickly approaching. As a collaboration, we were able to record the event, and we will be releasing that as a bonus episode come January, once our initial scheduled 10 episodes of Season 1 are complete. So if you're not following Hope for the Day or Sip of Hope on any social media platforms, check them out and start following them today. And be sure to check out all the events they are hosting at peervention.org. That's peervention.org. Also, as always, stay tuned to Anthologies of Hope for not only that bonus episode, but also future seasons where we'll be having in-depth conversations from some of those featured speakers and panelists as well. This week's Anthologies of Hope episode is another member of the First Heart Camp group from Melbourne, Florida in January of 2018. Erin Hurd spent some time with us this week, diving into the genesis of her own amazing podcast, Blackbird, love, loss, getting through the hard stuff, divorce, and taking time for yourself. If you're not familiar with Heart Camp, we dive deep into the ins and outs of it in our first two episodes. Additionally, the first couple of seasons of our podcast will cover conversations with members of the Heart Camp family before we start bringing in the aforementioned folks from the general mental health community. As a quick refresher, Heart Camp is the brainchild of Jamie Twerkowski in a two-day workshop focusing on authenticity, writing, bringing your heart to work, and mental health. For more info on Heart Camp, including upcoming dates like February 2019 in Melbourne, Florida, you can check out heartcampwithjamie.com. As I mentioned, I met Erin at the first Heart Camp almost a year ago now, but we really connected afterwards based on a comment I made on one of her social media posts pertaining to the difficulty of returning back home after a separation or divorce and being surrounded by or thrust into situations of your past. As you'll hear, it was really all centered around my favorite 90s teen drama and how pervasive some of that writing was for the time and how it stuck with both of us through the years. Going deeper into the conversation, Erin thankfully brings up the notion of railing against the quote-unquote checklist of life and how it's such an easy trap for all of us to get sucked into, myself included. My main takeaway from this episode in our conversation is that you're allowed to go through hard times, even electively or of your own choosing, and still enjoy the other side, still look for joy, still find joy, and plainly, still be happy. Just because you have to choose what is right for you at a path along your journey, and we certainly dive into Joseph Campbell and the hero's journey in this conversation, that does not mean you have to continually beat yourself up on the other side for making those initial choices of your betterment. As I mentioned, Erin has her own podcast with one of her closest friends called Blackbird, and it's available everywhere Anthologies of Hope is available as well. If you like this episode in our conversation, be sure to check out Blackbird for some great inspiring, yet wholly relatable stories talking through love and loss, and you'll get plenty of laughs as well. As you know by now, we're putting together a playlist available at anthologiesofhope.com/playlist that hosts and guests of each episode can contribute meaningful songs to. Since the idea for the playlist came after we recorded our interview with Erin, you don't hear Erin choose what song she wanted for her selection this week. But she eventually chose Florence and the Machine's Shake It Out, which is an excellent choice. One of my choices for this week was pretty much locked in as soon as we recorded and I knew I wanted to put a playlist together. Greg Holden's As Far As I Can is basically the lyrical equivalent of The Hero's Journey and my conversation with Erin, so I'm very excited to add that to the playlist. Additionally, I added in a little Easter egg of a song just for Erin by tacking on the Somerset's Jukebox. I want to hear why I threw that one in as well, but if you listen to the episode and take a listen to the song, you should find out pretty quickly. Each week, we'd like to remind you that if you're in a time of crisis, we'll be covering a range of potentially difficult topics. Please use this as a warning to seek help and come back to listen once you're in a more positive season. If you are in need of help, an abundance of international resources can be found on the Find Help pages from Detroit Love in Our Arms and Hope for the Day. Detroit Love in Our Arms can be found at TWLOHA.com/find-help, and Hope for the Day can be found at hftd.org/find-help. As always, you can find us at anthologiesofhope.com, on Facebook and Instagram as Anthologies of Hope, on Twitter as Anthologies Pod, or email us directly at anthologiesofhope, all one word, no punctuation, @gmail.com. Finally, like, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Overcast, and anywhere else you can find podcasts. So that's enough talking for me this week, and we will jump into our conversation. So here we go with this week's Anthologies of Hope, containing lots of laughs, dishing on the checklist of life, and coming out on the other side of a divorce. This week's Anthologies of Hope with Aaron Hurd. I would say your last name, but between all your different social media handles, I don't know which that, and probably also confusingly on Facebook, which my wife Amanda has confused my family with as well, using maybe presumably your middle name on Facebook. That's another one there as well. But I'll let you go ahead and intro yourself, and then we'll jump into some of our discussion.
Yeah, I actually joked that I should be just Aaron H, but technically still legally Aaron Hansen, or you can call me Aaron Hurd, whatever. I'm easy when it comes to that.
So I also appreciate you taking the time out to record tonight while your defending Stanley Cup champion Capitals are taking the ice against the Penguins.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They're in the background. Don't worry. Okay. So if I look off, thankfully nobody can hear me looking off, but that's what I'm doing.
So before we jump into all of this conversation, I wanted to ask, who is your favorite Dawson's Creek character and why is it Pacey?
Very good. I like how you did that. I might have to agree with you there. Yeah, I don't know. I might have to agree with you on PC. I'm trying to think of, you know, I did recently rewatch, as you know, I rewatched the entire series, and I think like one can't go without the other. They're just so well written. There's nothing like it anymore.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I do like a good story that I can empathize with. And I feel like PC just takes my heart. He's like, I don't know, the underdog that wins in the end. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I might agree with your little twist there.
We'll jump into a little bit of that once we get into it. But I mean, I did end up using some of Joey Potter's words in our wedding vows that we wrote, that we each individually wrote last year. So that was not, you know,
I love it.
15 years ago, but that was just about 13 months ago.
I love it.
And so, I mean, that was really how we, I think, initially connected after Heart Camp on some of social media and stuff like that.
Yep.
Was a reference to something you had mentioned as far as going back to your past and kind of revisiting your past. And mm-hmm. I kind of threw up that it was very similar to the series finale for Dawson's Creek.
Yes.
So, and then
that's what sparked my rewatching.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
So, I mean, with that, like jump into some of what that was surrounding as part of your journey, kind of kick that off to like where you got to that point or kind of what was there.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So I am 32 now, but I was previously married when I was almost 25. So the month before I turned 25. So 24, I was with him for 4 years before we got married. So from the time I was 20, and then we got married, and I would say that we were actively married for mm-hmm. 2 years, because then we were separated for three after that. So okay. We were separated technically longer than we were even actually married. And then divorced just about 3 years ago. I think it was maybe right around this time 3 years ago that it was actually finalized. It was like the end of September, beginning of October. So
And that's one of the weird things with divorce. I mean, similar to like, I am divorced as well. And that's kind of within the Heart Camp community, which we'll jump into in a bit. But it's interesting to see like the different pockets of almost like the archetypes of what brings people to Heart Camp, or kind of the archetype of the experience that folks have. In a lot of the other experiences that I've talked to with folks that are in the kind of divorce camp as well, it almost seems like the delineation between when you were married and then when the divorce was actually finalized is eventually like hazy or fuzzy or whatever, and gets a little bit of like, you know, when it was over, but it still takes that much time to get everything legal out of the way.
Yeah. And that actually brings up something else that I would definitely talk about, but yeah, as far as I agree with that. And I also think that for me personally, we had like as much of an amicable divorce as I feel like you can when it comes to something like that. For the most part, we were able to peacefully like separate things, and we owned a house. And so we were able to split things pretty reasonably without arguing. Obviously, in any ending of something, there's going to be a struggle. Mm-hmm. And so there were times, there's actually a quote that is, never cut what you can untie. And that's something that I really like try to stay true to. And just, there's a way out of this that doesn't have to mean that it has to be ugly. So for me, that was something that...
That's interesting. I was just looking up for a reference the other day. I was looking up a reference to the Gordian knot, which is a tale or fable, which is the complete opposite of that, which is, you know, an impossibly hard knot that they need to untie. And then
interesting.
Alexander the Great basically takes a sword out and cuts it in half.
Huh.
The myth never said like what it was to the person who could untie it had to untie it. They just had to undo it. So it's interesting that little piece there is the exact opposite. But yeah, that's a good point. And that's kind of the same thing for me. Going through my divorce, there was, depending on how much more you want to share on your end, I mean, I was the initiator in mm-hmm. mine. So I kind of went into it with the trepidation of being the bad guy.
Yep, same. Very much the same.
And so I was interested to see where like friendships went, where like alliances fell and things like that. So I in the end, I think I've been happily surprised by most of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a win some lose some game, but I would say pleasantly surprised by most folks there.
Yeah. Same experience. So I was the initiator. I think at that point in my life, I had, I don't know if you're like aware of the Saturn return concept or.
No, that's a new one.
Yeah. So look it up.
Okay.
Everybody listening, look it up. If you ever have heard, so I'm like also a big, like No Doubt and all of that music from back in the day, okay. Like No Doubt fan. Anyways, they have an album called The Saturn Return, and I never knew what it was. Their album is called The Return of Saturn, but it's about the Saturn return. And it's essentially like at this around like the 27-ish, 28 year of life. It's essentially like a quarter life crisis, really, when it comes down to it. But it's like a time where apparently you're like questioning your I don't want to say like the meaning of your life, but your where you are and
motivation, like inspiration. And
yeah, it's a really interesting concept. I had never heard of it until I felt like I was going through it. I just didn't feel like I was happy with anything. And I think that I still, and like kind of on my podcast this week, I talk about it, but I kind of feel like that's me at my core, and my default is that I don't think I'm ever fully satisfied. I'm recently engaged again, so I'm very happy and I'm excited. We're getting married a year from tomorrow.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And so I'm excited and I'm happy and I'm fulfilled, but I think I'm always the person that is looking for the next thing to kind of keep me going. So at that point in my life, it was like the first time that it really exploded. I'd always kind of done the quote unquote right path where I went to high school, went to college, went after college, went to get my master's in social work, you know, went and got a job, was with my then, you know, boyfriend, got engaged, bought a house. Like, it was like the American dream kind of. But then it was like when I had the chance to really sit and take a breath and think, I was like, is this really what I want for me right now? I mean, I just, you know, and I have all of, I'll have a lot of those things now. So it does worry me sometimes, I think, because I'm like, I don't ever want to get back to that point where I feel like, oh crap, here I am again. Mm-hmm. But I think, I feel like I'm going on a tangent, but I think that it just kind of came down to, all of a sudden, I just felt like nothing was right. And it's like in a hero, I feel like I'm like referencing all these things, but the hero's journey. I've done a lot of
therapy. I'm a huge Joseph Campbell fan. So the hero's journey is yeah. right up my alley.
So the hero's journey, it was like that call to act, like that call mm-hmm. to adventure. And it was this internal thing where I was like, I've never felt like that before, where I just felt like I had to, there was no option. I had to make a change and start off on this journey of my own, I guess.
You did mention your podcast there. I mean, we can give you a short plug, but this will basically be like the cliff notes. And then your podcast will end up being like the, you know, the full blown text for your journey. And then your friend you do your podcast with. So why don't you do a quick intro for your podcast?
Yeah. So I recently started a podcast called Blackbird with my good friend, Katie. And it's essentially for young, I actually hate the word divorcee. I feel like it's so old fashioned sounding. I don't know, but young divorcees and young widows. She was actually a widow at the age of 27. So both of us were similar as far as like age wise. And we really just found like there wasn't a lot of resources directed at that population. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of divorce groups, I felt like, were aimed at, you know, maybe 40s with kids or something, and that support that they needed. And then, you know, she found either like very niche groups like military wives or older women. And so we have been talking about it for, you know, the past 6 or 7 years, and we talked about writing a book, but now in this day and age, we decided to make it into a podcast. So it's called Blackbird. So yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. We'll definitely link to that too. I caught the first episode of that. I mean, that was pretty good. Yeah. And then I saw you guys, or your second episode's coming out tomorrow we're recording. Yeah. And so it's interesting though, too, as far as the notion of a lot of the folks that went to Heart Camp, which we'll, you know, eventually get to, have written books, but now since then have started a couple podcasts as well. You guys have Blackbird. I mean, there's some other folks from North Carolina that started their own who are therapists as well. So it's interesting to see that that's one of the channels to more popular than, you know, a couple of years ago, or 5-10 years ago, like everybody had their own blog. Now, instead of having that as your main communication channel, you want a podcast, which I prefer. And I was actually saying this when I was in therapy yesterday to my therapist, of basically saying like, I am intimidated by writing that down and publishing it, but I would much rather have a conversation and talk about it conversationally. And I have no problem putting that out there. So it's interesting to see kind of
that's interesting,
where you're able to jump into the deeper parts. And I'm not so caught up in my own head about writing eloquently, but I can end up speaking eloquently, or so I'm told. So that's good.
Yeah, that makes sense.
When you were going through the divorce period, like when was it difficult? What was there that, you were fighting yourself? Cause like you said, you're the one that's like never fulfilled, or for me, like I describe it as like a frenetic spirit. So mm-hmm. if you're always kind of like bouncing around doing something after being, you know, attached to somebody else, whether, you know, literally, or just, you know, in everybody else's mind, now that you're finally free, like it felt free, using air quotes, mm-hmm. like it, to me, it felt overboard, because there were times where like I was walking through the parking lot of like the grocery store and almost had like an anxiety attack just to figure out like what I was doing for dinner that night, when it was no different than any other night I had done before. But it was just like, it felt like everything was there, but I could mm-hmm. do anything I wanted at the same time. So did you have any moments like that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I, geez, to like sum all of it up, Yeah. So I, you know, like I said, I was with him from the time I was 20. And so I, other than college, I lived, you know, on campus in college, but other than that, I had never been, you know, I'd never truly been on my own mm-hmm. before. And it was freeing, but it was, you know, cause it's exciting. You can like set up your own little space and you can decorate it how you want to decorate it. And, but it was, you know, I didn't have somebody. I always have said that I just wanted somebody to sit with at night,
yep.
even if it was, you know, I'm also the only child. So it's not like I was ever really surrounded by a lot of people in my home, but I at least had like my parents sitting around, even if we weren't like talking or just watching something together. So I felt very lonely a lot of the times. As far as I think I also, especially at the beginning, I know I did. I had a lot of guilt, and I think it was, I was scared about completely changing my life at that time. The summer that everything kind of started, my ex and I had talked about potentially trying to start a family at the end of that summer. And I think that might've also been like a holy crap moment. Like, mm-hmm. no, that's a big step. And I felt scared and I felt guilty that I was potentially taking that away from somebody. Side note, since then he's been remarried and he has two children. So he's fine.
That's
and that
good.
Obviously didn't come to fruition. But in that moment, I felt like I'm not only doing this to myself, but I like, you know, I still care about him and I want him to be happy. And I was scared that just because we weren't a match and my life wasn't where I wanted it to be, mm-hmm. didn't mean that I, you know, wished, you know, I felt like I had, like I needed to make sure that he was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also felt bad because my parents paid for our wedding and that wasn't much before that, you know, it was 2 years before
yeah.
that. And so I felt guilt there and they had like this path in mind. And so I'm an empath. So I think about everybody else and I had to really learn to, you know, not necessarily not think about everybody else because that will never be me, but to really think about, you know, when I say something, do I really have, you know, if I'm saying something, but I'm shaking my head no when I'm saying it, do I really mean what I'm saying? Or am I just trying to convince myself that I mean that, if that makes sense?
Oh, absolutely. So with annotating yourself as an empath and being familiar with Joseph Campbell, are you also familiar with the Enneagram?
I am, but I haven't taken the real one.
Okay.
If that makes sense. I there was one online that I took and it was kind of like, well, based on this, you might be this or you might be that, but I'm very interested to see what I actually come out to be.
So what was, we'll follow up with this, once you actually take a more in-depth one, but, I am a two. And so that basically means the giver. I've also, since my hard camp session, there's a handful of folks there that were twos as well. So we've geeked out over plenty of Enneagram podcasts.
Please. Yes. Okay. So please. Yes. Set me up with something that
okay.
I need to figure it out.
and so those, the connotation of the two is I'm not okay unless you're okay.
Yeah.
And so for me, you know, being the empath, helping others, doing doing, you know, what for others, what I would normally do for myself comes natural. I myself am an only child as well. So I spent a lot of time doing stuff on my own.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my friends all had siblings. So it was, you know, the only time I ended up, you know, interacting with anyone was when we were doing something or like outside playing, or it wasn't just ever, you know, hanging around as kids. So it always like, what can I bring to the activity to make it do that? So that carried over
yeah.
into my adult life.
Right, right.
And so it was very interesting for me where it's like, okay, like I, like this relationship isn't good for me, but I, you know, no ill will towards you, but it's just a case of, like, we'll make sure that that's taken care of as much as we can from a separation point of view. But I still need to, like, that was like really the first time I ever like jumped at the chance of like, hey, I need to like take care of me here.
Yeah.
As opposed to like overreach and almost like, I don't want to say babysit because it sounds like a negative connotation, but it's like to do the all the stuff that twos usually do to take care of everyone else before they take care of themselves.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that rings very true. And I think that's something that I've had to work at over. So, you know, I've since the very early stages of not even being separated, but like thinking that this is probably the direction that it's going in. I've had the same therapist, so 6 years. And for a long time, I would schedule at least once a week. Oftentimes I would see her twice a week. Now I go once every 2 months, which is like a miracle that that's the case. But I think honestly through that is probably the reason why I still feel I'll always be the person that is like, I need to, I don't even know the words, that I hold myself to a standard that I don't want to let other people down. But I think through therapy and through just working through everything, it's true. I mean, I've learned to, as much as possible, and it's something that I have to work at every day, is making sure that I'm filled up and that, you know, that I'm not stretching myself thin, and that I'm not, just because I don't want to let anybody else down.
Absolutely. And that's, again, for me, one of the biggest things I've learned both in my current marriage, as well as with my therapist, going on a little over 14 months since I moved out to Chicago a couple of years ago, but I started seeing my current therapist a little over a year. And that's something that ended up helping a lot too, to understand that. And it wasn't, there weren't things there that I ever saw as a negative before, but it's identifying that and understanding that you need to kind of fill yourself up before you can help others, because you, like, if you're in a negative space, you can't ever, you know, contribute to somebody positively. So yeah. I mean, is that one of the main resources that you use, like, throughout your separation and going through the divorce finalization and everything else, as far as the power of that therapy there?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know that I would be where I am, honestly. I mean, I know, and I actually recently talked about this too, but a year ago is the first time that I set an appointment out a month and not like every 2 weeks or every week. And I got in my car after that session and I cried because I was like, there was a time that I felt like I was, for months and probably years, that I was just, I felt like a car just spinning their tires on the side of the road, and that I would never, ever, that ditch was so deep that I would never get out. And so when I set that appointment, I was like, I just broke down because I was like, I never thought that I would ever be here. And I wrote her this long email thanking her. And I knew that she would say like, you did the work, but her response was just amazing because she's just an amazing person. But I attribute that. I thankfully have great, I think it's just like the people that you surround yourself with a lot of times. I'm also an internal processor, and I never realized that I keep things in more than I really thought that I did as far as emotions. And I learned that, yeah, I go in to myself, but then when I'm ready, I need those people to be around to be able to form a safety net, I guess.
Yeah, just a community around you, your support system.
Exactly. So I would say therapy and friends, and those are the, you know, family. Obviously I would go, you know, I went home. I lived at home for 2 years when I needed to move out before I was able to really live on my own. So that was a big thing, but that therapy, because I'm, you know, like I said, I like to think on things, and I was a therapist for 5 years. So I don't know. I don't really like to ask for help like I thought I did.
Well, and that goes to my next question. Was that something where you initiated that, or was it through talking with family and friends, like it was brought up where maybe you should go or something like that? Or how did you end up getting there?
That's actually a really good question. So kind of have always for a while before I actually went, even before I would say that I was having, you know, marital problems, which take well, that and word
again,
for what
it is, doesn't have to be an issue where you need a problem to go to therapy.
Right. So before that, I kind of always thought that like, maybe I should go, you know, I'm a therapist. I had had like little, you know, I'd gone here and there just for like little, you know, things that I needed to work through, but it was never like a sustained somebody that I went to every week. And, but it was something when I knew that I needed to go myself, like when I just felt it in my soul that I needed it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I needed it. And so I had heard of this lady for a couple of years, cause she actually was like the supervisor of somebody that I used to work with. And so I had heard of her. I reached out and like, there's nothing to lose. You know, I'm feeling like crap and I have nothing to lose. And so it's been honestly been a godsend, but yeah, I did it on my own because I think it just was like, it was similar to the sense where I felt that so compelled to leave. I felt so compelled to, I need to leave, but I also need to get help from like, and support for myself at the same time. So I knew that much.
Yeah. It's almost like there's that signpost telling you need to leave, but you need to figure out what your game plan is or know that you'll have some guidance along the way while still empowering yourself to get there.
Exactly. I knew I couldn't do it by myself. I just knew I felt I could feel it.
So that's almost a pretty good transition or a great transition into kind of the next topic for not being able to do it by yourself. So joining the first Heart Camp group down in Florida. So why don't you give like a quick rundown of how you would describe Heart Camp and then how did you hear about it and sign up and everything?
Yeah. Isn't that the question? The question of the, you know, what is Heart Camp? It was like, I don't know, Rick, you probably will explain it better. It was like a big, I wouldn't even sound like a workshop. It was just like a soul shop.
That's a good way of putting it.
I just felt like I was in a room full of people that I had just met, but that were just so open to being their authentic selves. And it's so often that you're not able to do that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, there was, you know, speakers and we talked about different topics that you just don't talk about with people mm-hmm. unless you've known them for years or, you know, I don't know. I felt so much that I needed like a few days. I remember when I got home to like process everything and then be able to put it out into the world. But yeah, it was a fantastic experience. And I'm like not, I wouldn't say I'm like a religious person at all. You know, I have my beliefs and whatnot, but it was like a very spiritual. Yeah, it was, I don't know. It was cool. There was a lot of good vibes in there.
We'll get back to the spiritual part in a moment for another event that we were at. But
as far as like learning about it, just to put that out there, I had followed To Write Love on Her Arms since probably close to the start. I remember when I was in college, I actually volunteered. I went to University of Maryland and I volunteered at, it's called Help Center. So it's a peer crisis and counseling intervention hotline. And so I remember being on the computer, like on shift one night and somehow just like searching and finding it. And it was like a MySpace page, you know, at the time. And I've just always gone back to it. And I've just always followed. I've always followed the company and Jamie. And it like resonated with me before, just to kind of as a caveat, before my ex, I was in a relationship for 4.5 years. And you know, not to go too much into it, but there was a lot of like mental health issues within that and, you know, and other things. And so it just kind of led me to that. And I'm glad that it did.
That's excellent. Yeah. And I mean, I think a lot of folks would have a similar story. We'll probably hear a very similar story of being familiar with To Write Love on Her Arms, following Jamie Twerkowski, the founder, mm-hmm. and then just following his writing. being, I imagine you end up having, if you feel too much, if not one copy, but multiple copies.
Right.
I've lost.
Behind me on the bookshelf.
Yeah, that's why I've lost track between what I have on my bookshelf next to me, the bookshelf we have in Amanda's office.
Yeah.
The amount we've sent to friends and stuff like that. So that ends up being a case there. But as I'll probably end up, you know, mentioning multiple times in all of the interviews that we have here, episodes that we have here. But yeah, I mean, Heart Camp is advertised by Jamie as a 2-day workshop for, you know, authenticity, bringing your heart to work if you're in a period of transition and just trying to, you know, understand, you know, who you are, where you're at in life, and kind of going from there.
At heart, just not to cut you off, Rick, but that bringing your heart to work, that resonated with me. And I know other girls, like you were mentioning a couple of the girls that started a podcast in North Carolina, but that resonated with me so much. I think about that probably daily as far as bringing your heart to work, because it's a tough topic for me personally, and still trying to figure out, you know, at 32, what I want to do with my life when I grow up. And yeah, but it just, that is one thing that it seems so simple, but it's not as simple as you really would think that it could or really should be.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the biggest things where I didn't attend your session, but I was supporting Amanda there. So Jamie tagged me as the first or the Heart Camp plus one. Amanda tagged me as the Heart Camp creeper. So Jamie was a little bit nicer than my wife.
Love it.
So then, I mean, just seeing the amount of people that were there, seeing the sharing that people did and the authenticity that people had and the inspiration that they had to bring their heart to work after that, that was kind of my draw and one of my biggest attractions to then go to the LA session as soon as it was scheduled.
Right.
And so, I mean, for me, that's impacted me the most too, because I end up having a very busy schedule. I've been in my career for 13 plus years, but there's a lot there that I end up coming back to as far as what can I put my heart into? Like what deserves my heart? And then like what is something where it's, you know, just something that's a part of the day versus something where I really want to sink my teeth into it and do that. So
that makes sense.
Based on what I see you doing on social media, I mean, you just said you don't know what you want to do when you grow up. I mean, you work a 9-to-5, you're going to school, you do photography, and now you have your podcast as well. So, I mean, I think you're doing all of the things that you want to when you grow up. So, I mean, that's a pretty...
The whole, like, normal 9-to-5, you know. I mean, the company I work for is great, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's, like, you know, the passion that I... But, yeah, I mean, I do those other, like, more creative things in the program that I'm in, the communications at Syracuse program. And so trying to, in a journalism focus. So I'm trying to get more back into that creative realm, because that's really where I see myself, is using creativity and ideally pairing it with social work and my background in that, and creating something to help and, you know, support people. So that's, yeah. I mean, I'm still on that pathway. It's actually funny, because last week I went to therapy and I said, you know, I feel like I'm back in a similar position that I was, you know, a couple years ago, as far as I feel happy here and here, but I'm not so happy here. And she, one thing that, you know, that has kind of stuck with me is, she always says, and it makes so much sense, is growth happens in a spiral. So essentially, you're not growing in a straight line. You're growing in a sense that you might wrap back around to this one issue that you keep coming to, but you've grown so much since the last time that you were in that spot. So thinking about, like, you know, yeah, you might not be right where you are, where, you know, your end goal necessarily, if that's even a thing, but you're further along in your journey, you know, towards that.
I love that. That actually blew my mind, because as soon as you said that, I started thinking, and there's at least a dozen instances of that that I can just pull off the top of my head and apply that concept to there immediately. And even, you know, something I was doing for work, which I was passionate about to begin with, everybody else kind of scattered, so I was left doing it on my own. But it was something where I kept up because I kind of liked doing it, but I didn't have just the bandwidth to keep going. Mm-hmm. And then now, like, having done that, having kind of kicked my own butt to get through it, now has brought me into the ability and to have the production capacity to do a podcast on talents and topics that I am very passionate about. So, like, always having some of that stuff kind of come, you know, again, full circle. And now every time I kind of see something where it's like a callback to something that's, you know, from already happened in my life, I'll definitely be thinking of that one.
Yeah, it's something I always come back to. It's also like comforting too, you know, so mm-hmm. that you don't feel like a loser. You know, I mean, that's an awful thing to say, but it's like, here I am back again. And you can think about it like that, but it's kind of reframing that thought and thinking, you know, yeah, you might feel like you're back in that same spot, but you are not the same person that was there before.
100%.
Yeah.
Would you say you found what you were looking for from Heart Camp?
Yeah, I don't even know that I had any
expectation.
I just knew as soon as Jamie posted it, I was like, if he is going to be leading this, you know, 42 people, I think, if he's going to be leading this like intimate conversation, I want to be there. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to be there. I remember thinking, I cannot spend, you know, the money to go, but I don't care. I'm going to go. So, and I was like terrified that it was going to sell out right away. So I just jumped on it. And yeah, I do because it was just such a great experience. I've, you know, met so many great people that thankfully because of social media, we're all spread around that I've keep in touch with, like, you know, on Facebook or Snapchat or Instagram or whatever. And it's just like so nice to see that, like, you know, even pop up that it just, I don't know. Yes. The long and short of it. Yes. It's more than I thought that I would come out of it with.
And I mean, when you mentioned social media and you think of the majority of your connections on social media, it's like, okay, well, we went somewhere and we had dinner with friends. So like, it's a friend of a friend that then, you know, we just connected on Facebook or whatever. So like, right. You have that type of connection there and then some interaction or whatever. But then to have that type of social media connection from, you know, the 40 plus other people there and have, you know, the intensity of what's shared in the room and everything and the conversations there, both, you know, in session and afterwards, and it kind of builds up the connection that you have on social media there is just much more stronger and more relevant, and kind of the antithesis of the, you know, the negative connotation of social media in general, or just kind of the anonymity most of, you know, Twitter or quote unquote old people Facebook and stuff like that. So just having the genesis of those relationships being in a place like Heart Camp and having it be something that is so authentic and, you know, it's almost like trial by fire with everybody in the room sharing and kind of being in the same space and being in the kind of the same mindset to get there is very powerful.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. It's like, I feel much more strongly connected to people that I've met, you know, 2 days. You know, I also went back and so did you as for Heavy and Light. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, maybe another time. And I feel so much more like a kindred spirit with some, you know, of those people that I've literally spent 3 days with and people, you know, than a lot of people, I would say, that I am connected with on social media. So it's pretty cool. I also feel like we kind of all, you know, or I can't speak for everybody, but a large amount of us felt like we were all kind of like the same, you know, it's like you find your tribe, yep. Like you're all the same kind of feeling, you know, you come from the same, whatever you want to call it.
It's the same makeup, same material, all have the same desires.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Thank you. My brain is like shutting down for the day.
So, I mean, that's what you mentioned, being not religious, but spiritual earlier. And that's kind of the same for me, where for me, seeing what hard camp was there in January was a good step to kind of identify the need to do the work inside myself. And then even attending later in April in LA, like it was something of going through that. And I mean, again, it is a workshop since you get a book. So technically that qualifies it by the dictionary definition. But I mean, even with mine, like I didn't write in my workbook that much. But the inspiration from there is good. But in the meantime, there we had again gone back for Heavy and Light. And to me, that is that's the most spiritual experience I've had in I don't know how long.
Honestly, it was, I don't know. I felt like from the very beginning when with the just the words on the screen and the music playing, it just felt like I was transported to what heaven would be like. I don't even know. It was like a church, and I'm not, you know, I was raised Jewish. So just to put that out there, my dad's Catholic, my mom's Jewish, I was bat mitzvahed. So if I were to like consider myself, you know, if I had to put myself in a bubble, that's where I would. But I just felt like it was like such a spiritual experience. It would just flowed through my bones, and I just loved it. I loved every minute of that.
And so for folks who aren't familiar with Heavy and Light, it is the annual concert that Detroit Love Under Arms puts on down in Orlando. In years past, they've had a traveling tour of it, but it's billed as a night of songs, conversation, and hope. And so from, you know, spoken word, Jamie does a couple kind of intermissions. They have spoken word poetry, and then they also have some awesome musical performers that vary. But then perennially, it's always, they close it out with John Foreman from Switchfoot. And so this year happened to be that one of the audience members was, you know, telling John he was playing a song in the wrong key.
Oh my gosh,
and John told him just to get up on stage and play it for him. And he jumped up on stage and hit a home run. And then John had him stay on.
It was amazing.
The rest of the night. And I was up in the balcony because I had jumped on the VIP ticket. So we were able to do that, luckily. And I was literally like pacing up on the balcony, like, I can't believe this is happening. I'm going nuts, like watching this happen.
I mean, I had chills, like literally the whole time. I was just, I don't know. I just felt, and like I said, I'm not church, you know, I'm not like a church goer or anything, but I just felt it in my soul.
There were a handful of people that were there where that's basically what we all agreed on, where like that night that was church
exactly.
to us.
Yes, that's what I imagine it to be.
And as far as whatever, you know, we can do to get back there to do that time and time again. I mean, we've already, Amanda's already been bugging Jessica, the COO of Detroit Love, to say, hey, when's Heavy and Light for next year? Let's get a date. And she's like, calm down. Yeah, I think they don't quite understand the monster that they're making, but we'll see where it goes from there.
Keep going, Amanda. I approve.
Coming to kind of wrap this up a little bit, what would be the one thing that you would want someone maybe in your position, you know, 8 years ago, or someone who's going through what you're going through right now, what's the one thing that you would want someone to take away from your story?
Oh, so much.
Or if one is too much to narrow it down, it can be multiples. We can have a bulleted list.
Come spend some time with me. I'll take you under my wing. No, I think one big thing, and I've recently actually said this to my cousin. My cousin is 22 and she's getting married in March, and she has a very, very strong and healthy relationship. And they've been together for, you know, many years now, since she was like a freshman in high school. But I told her that, you know, just make sure, and I would say this to anybody, make sure that you're not just on this fast track of, you know, this is, like, this is the highway and these are the signs that are marked. And I know that I'm just going to follow these signs that are marked for me. Like, don't be afraid to veer off that highway and go into the woods and, you know, chop and do everything you can to build your own path and make it your own. You know, you can be a couple and a we and make that very strong and fulfilling and lasting, but you need to make sure that you're a full individual human being as well. So, and that's really the main importance, is that you're following your inner guide and who that person is and how they feel and what they think about things. And then, you know, and then feel free to be a we and build something together, but just not losing sight that you're also a person. And then also not be afraid to blow your life up if you need to. I just truly believe that if you open yourself up to, like, this is just not where I'm meant to be, and you listen and you trust yourself and your gut and your vibes, and you just, I don't know, it sounds cliche, but if you just believe in the process, that you'll get to where you need to be. It was not as fast as I wanted to be, mm-hmm. but it happened. And I'm still, and you know, and you're still going to forever be on that journey, but it's just, you gotta listen to yourself. Don't deny the things that are whispering to you just because, you know, it might just be too hard to actually pay attention to them.
I mean, I think those are two excellent points that really go hand in hand, trusting your inner guide, and then don't be afraid to blow your life up, because at some point along the way, you're either going to still be looking for your guide, or in following your guide, just kind of like anyone with GPS, you think you know better, so you're going to go a different path. And then,
tell my dad, she knows the fastest route.
Yeah. So it ends up being a case where your inner guide is constantly rerouting or auto-correcting or whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
And so you eventually are not where you need to be. So sometimes the only way you can ever get there is to blow your life up. Obviously, there are times where it can be, you know, less drastic changes. there are times where, yeah, I mean, you can't be afraid to make those moves. Like, if you know those moves are the ones that are honest and true to yourself.
Exactly.
Thank you so very much for joining us this week. We hope you had as good a time listening as we had recording the interview. Don't forget to check out anthologiesofhope.com/playlist for all the awesome songs that will get added each week. You can find us on social media at Anthologies of Hope on Facebook and Instagram, and Anthologies Pod on Twitter. It would be great if you could subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or Google, and leave us a review. As always, remember, everyone has a story, and it's about time we start listening.